Okay, that is entertainment. It is Friday, the first Friday of the year for us here on the 9 till noon show. Of course, actually, it's not. It's the second. It's the first with Fionnuala here. I've got myself a little bit confused. But anyway, we're going to talk all things entertainment, and we want you involved in the conversation as well. Have you been doing anything interesting? Have you any plans? Have you been watching anything? Did you go and see anything? Make some recommendations, and it influences what other people watch and do and enjoy and how they entertain themselves. Okay, we have in studio with us Fionnuala Rabbit.
Hello.
Michael's joining us for once. He's for once,
I know.
Actually. He's the second in.
I'm very excited because this is unlike me to be the punctual one.
I know.
As I say to everybody, if I'm here...
Can I just say, by the way, sitting down... as the intro music is playing would not be what I'd class as punctual.
Oh God, no, anything. Once I'm within the 15 minute mark. Once I'm not over 15 minutes late, I consider that on time.
All right.
I'm
How
very
was
happy
your
with that.
Christmas and New Year? Did you have a good time? We haven't spoken.
My Christmas and New Year started off amazing because as I keep telling everybody, I have the best grandbaby in the world. And he just turned one before Christmas. So he was very exciting because he's getting nice and big and he's playing grandma off against his parents.
Lovely.
So if they're trying to say no to him, he just comes toddling over to me with his arms out. And of course, then he gets exactly what he wants. I plan on ruining this child. but then everybody got sick. Oh my God,
yeah,
it was just like
genie
Max. We had a lovely time, but then next minute we were cocooning in. And luckily, my son-in-law has a bit of a bog. So we had lovely turf fires and everything. So we were all just under blankets watching the darts, yeah. Which has really become, since
that's
my daughter got married and I started hanging out with this lad that's now part of my life. Darts is now part of my life at Christmas. And I was even in the pub one of the nights and I'm looking over people's shoulders who are taller than
amazing.
Me going, Jesus, how's he getting on there now?
It's astonishing how it can pull you in, isn't it?
It really does. Mm. It really does. And as I'm being pulled in, I'm just like, this is ridiculous. What has happened to you?
It's just a very simple form of entertainment that's effective.
Oh, it 100%. But listen, am I the only one though? What's with the girls?
The dancers?
What is? I just don't get it.
It's a little bit of pizzazz, but
it's not giving you pizzazz. You know what I mean?
I don't really see their function because this is going to sound incredibly sexist, right? You don't even get a good look at them.
No, 100%.
I know
I
know that sounds terrible, right? But if it's there for eye candy, you don't get a good look at them.
No, they're not.
Sounds terrible.
They're not like glammed up. If you know what I'm trying to say, it's not like as if they're there like Las Vegas dancers.
I think it's for the live audience. You see, I think the whole thing of the darts is it's the live audience experience, and maybe there's a benefit that we don't get it as
maybe
as TV
we don't see it on the TV part.
It does feel a little bit. Of a time that's not now.
And I just think there's something, because I don't find it hilarious when you're watching it, there is something about darts that just doesn't seem to be able to elevate itself up to like, you know, classy birds.
I don't have your list, by the way.
Oh, here we go.
Thanks very much indeed.
But I have to say, it was fantastic. And Luke Littler was amazing. It was unbelievable. I didn't think he was going to pull it off against... Michael Van Gerwen.
It was interesting.
We had
Super Chin, Daryl Gurney on too, reflecting on it earlier in the week too, which was nice to get his insights. Michael, good morning to you. You're very welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Greg. It's great
very
to be
good.
Here.
I hope you've got your snow tires on for coming up that hill.
Yeah, that was a longer walk than usual. About a 40-minute walk turned into like 55 minutes, which I didn't anticipate, but it was okay. But
yeah, it's fine.
It did strain me.
I didn't see it on your list, but it's just in case anyone wants a decent show that is very bingeable for the weekend, and it's on Netflix, and it is called The Breakthrough. And it's a real story about it's not really a cold case, but it's a murder, and it's really quite contemporary, but it's a murder that happens. It's not really very murderous, if you know what I mean. It's a murder that happens, and this is in the description of it, and it goes cold, and then a genealogist teams up with the person investigating the crime 16 years on. This was in 2019, 2020. And it was the second biggest ever investigation in Sweden, so the Swedish people would be very aware of it. But it's 4 episodes, it's on Netflix, and it's very bingeable in one sitting, if you want. So I enjoyed it, actually. It's dubbed, But I didn't really mind it.
And the name of it is the
Breakthrough.
Breakthrough.
Some of I know that some of the streamers now are employing artificial intelligence now to match the mouths with the words.
Yes.
So dubbing is going to change quite significantly through 25. You know, new programs. You're not going to get this delay. But it's called The Breakthrough. It's on Netflix. I think it's about 4 or 5, but very, very watchable.
I'm just looking at it here because I didn't even see it.
Really,
on Netflix,
really watchable. Very watchable. New. Yeah, good show.
Yeah, 4 episodes. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely putting that on my list.
No, do. You'll enjoy it because it's a story that's real. It's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it all makes sense. And there's no crazy twists or what have you. So I really enjoyed that. So I'd recommend that for what it is worth. I also was doing a big deep dive into older films. This last while. I've given up on anything new coming out. You know.
You've seen them all before, to be honest.
The new films.
Yeah. Sometimes you wonder why they do them again and not, instead of just you probably know Michael the word for, you know how they re-enhance kind of the old actual film.
Oh, remaster or something.
The way they do them up to make them look better.
The Perfect Murder with Michael Douglas and who else is in it? Michael Douglas is the main character in it.
Perfect Murder.
Yeah, excellent old film. Brilliant old film.
Don't even know that one.
I don't know that one,
But it's just a really good old film.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt it. Yeah, I'm sure,
So stuff like that, that's kind of
Douglas
stuff.
Douglas put out a load of them, wasn't he?
He did, and he was in a lot of good films.
Yeah. Falling Down. Rewatch that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's
You probably haven't seen it for years.
True.
The Proposal. Great old film.
Oh, very nice.
Demi Moore's in it. You know what I mean? There's so many, and that's just Michael Douglas's.
Syndrome was his first big breakthrough, wasn't it? Jane Fonda's in there. That was a great film. Jack Lemmon.
Your punishment for being late is that I'm going to start with Fionnuala, but you're okay. Both on this one, actually, because it's a cinema offering and it's called Nosferatu.
Nosferatu, yes.
Yeah. Nosferatu.
I slowed down so that Michael would pronounce it because I keep saying it wrong. We went to see this because this is to be honest, it's a very weird time in cinema, to my mind, because a lot of the stuff that's coming out now is, again, to my mind, very Halloween-y.
Yeah.
You know the way, for the start of the year, you'd kind of think it'd be something kind of like light, or that it would be something, you know, with like depth in the movie, you know what I mean? Yeah. Setting 2025 on a whole, what's our social standing thing that we're upset about this year, you know, that kind of a movie. But actually, you look at all these movies coming out and a lot of them seem to be kind of in the horror or...
There's a few, they're heavy.
They're horror genre.
But what are you doing going watching a horror in the cinema? Did we not talk about this?
Well, we went, because I was kind of challenged to do it.
Yes, I did challenge
you. And also then it was a case between going to this or going to see Robbie Williams.
Which I can't wait to see, which is going to be brilliant because I love Robbie Williams. He's the only talented one and take that. Take a breath.
Sorry, Robbie Williams, would rather lie in traffic than have to suffer through 2 hours of him. I actually tried to watch one
of
his...
Is that because you don't like him because he's still peed off with him leaving Take That?
I don't know if it's a combination of everything.
It's loyalty to the rest of the
band. When he left Take That, I did want to ring the hotline and I wasn't allowed because I was 26. But
you were not scarred by that.
But I was very upset about it. But it's actually from... And also then I read his... As I said again numerous times, I read his biography, I should say, which was written by some guy from Rolling Stones, and I was told, oh, this is the quintessential biography, and it made me want to get on a plane, fly to Los Angeles, find him, clip him around the ear and say, for the love of God, as my father would say, use your loaf.
I'm going to say it one more time about him. I saw him singing live again recently. He sang Angels. Sing the bloody song.
Standing there. Getting everyone.
Soaking up the atmosphere with the microphone pointed at the audio. Audience, sing the song.
He's
please. You won't see Sabrina Carpenter do that. She's up there shaking her stuff and singing her songs.
Oh, yeah.
He stands there letting the audience sing it.
And he just looks so different as well. What's with all the work?
What's this got to do with Nosferatu?
Nothing.
I couldn't go and see Robbie Williams. He wanted to go.
We couldn't have gone to see Robbie Williams because then Fionnuala would have gone on a rant about Robbie Williams on air.
We wouldn't have seen her today.
So we would have,
I'd be still ranting.
Yes.
So then this was my choice.
Luckily, we avoided the rant.
Was between Ross. Now you get both. Was between Nosferatu or Robbie Williams.
Yes.
And as you know, I dislike horror, but I was like, no, I'll do. That's how strongly I feel about the Robbie Williams movie.
Wow.
Without having seen it, it probably is, people, I shouldn't say don't go and see it because it probably is amazing. It's I've not seen anything about it.
I will
this
go
is my
see
personal
it. I'll go
feelings.
See it on my own, yeah.
Robbie and I have a beef, and that's all I need to say.
Does he know about this?
He's discussed this.
He's unaware. Yeah. He's unaware. Sadly, he's unaware.
He's in denial.
But so we went to see Nosferatu. Nosferatu, as most people will know, is a remake of a
silent film.
No.
Yeah, silent. Yeah, it's a remake of silent film.
There's been 100. You know,
but the original was, you're right, 1929, Max Schreck. Yeah. It was an illegal, it was a remake of
Dracula.
I've
only just said that because without the rights. Lee said it to me. So
I wouldn't have gone that far back with it because there was one that was done in black and white as well before that, wasn't there?
No, that was the original. The original was they couldn't get the rights to Bram Stoker's novel. So they were just like, well, let's just change the names. And they made Nosferatu.
Yeah, because the black and white one.
That's the one, yeah.
So it's a Dracula movie then?
Yeah, it's a Dracula movie in all respects, yeah. It follows the exact same story as Bram Stoker's novel, point for point. And then there was a 1979 with Klaus Kinski, which is also a very renowned, famous version. But again, it's just a Dracula story.
Is it any good, Fionnuala? Huh? Is it any good?
It's a struggle, I have to say. I saw the black and white one years ago. It was one of those ones that kind of popped
this was
up.
Obviously, before Final Destination
100%, before I was frightened by everything. And I defy anybody to watch Final Destination and call me.
I watched all of them in a row. Come on.
No.
You're crazy, man.
You are.
You couldn't be up to me.
It's coming for you.
Yeah, it couldn't be up to you.
So, anyways, we went to see this. This is exactly what you were talking about. Why they made this, I don't know. Mm. Why they didn't just redo, you know what I mean, do up the old one and put it out again. It's fine. I mean, there was people in the cinema that liked it, but to my mind, I just didn't think it wasn't either scary enough, gory enough, or kind of made you care enough about it.
Yeah.
You know, so it is the kind of real original sort of Dracula story, you know what I mean? You have this creature. And he is a demon and he is attracted to this woman and it's like they have new, you know, they don't know each other. It's kind of in their souls or whatever and this kind of thing. And she feels being drawn to him and all this. Lily Rose Depp is in it. Johnny Depp and Vanessa Paradis' daughter. You liked her.
That's a very good performance.
See, it's the genre. I would never go and watch this or probably not even watch it in the telly because it's a genre that I'm not interested in.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
I tell you,
and there's quite a lot of high-profile vampire-type movies that I haven't watched for those reasons.
It could be something that's kind of different for you in it. I just think I went assuming that I was going to be afraid to walk out to the car.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I'm not into this, and it gives me the heebie-jeebies. So I thought, I'm going to be afraid now walking out to the car in the dark. I was like, this is going to be brilliant. And it just didn't have that. There was some jumps in it, you know what I mean, as in... But, you know, at this point in my life, I get that when I walk down the stairs and forget why I'm down there. So, you know what I mean? It was very much... So in this, there was a few jumps in it, but there really wasn't anything,
He switches the telly on and when it lights up... Who did that?
Yeah, are you? You know, you go upstairs, then you hear voices, and you think you're being robbed. And no, you
walks back into the kitchen. The kettle's boiling.
You forgot to turn the telly off.
How come the kettle's boiling?
Exactly. Look at. Don't you?
I know.
It'll come to you in the end.
It's come. Yeah.
But yes. So this didn't have enough. It didn't have enough horror for me. If it's going to be a horror, be a horror.
Yeah.
It didn't have enough horror. It didn't have enough blood and gore and guts and stuff like that. It did have a few kind of little bits in it, but. I would have gone three times over. I remember watching the original one, and I know I would have been a lot younger and that kind of thing, so you're kind of a bit more into being frightened and that. But I just remember, even in the black and white, that there was an edge to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that you kind of felt, oh, God, this is, you know, getting into my psyche here. Whereas in this, it just felt like they were skimming along the surface of the story and they didn't really get down into it. And, I mean, there's some very good actors in it that I've seen in other things.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe is great.
Willem Dafoe is very good in it. He's probably the best one in it, but I'm not a big Willem
Dafoe. Willem Dafoe's a funny actor in that he never... he's not an A-lister.
No, but he's very much Willem Dafoe.
But he's very familiar.
Yeah, he's not one of those guys. Yeah, he's never above the title, exactly. Yeah, he's not.
No,
yeah.
He's great. I think he's not really... Like, you never not know it's Willem Dafoe. Yeah. You can't really step out of it being Willem Dafoe.
He couldn't have done The Penguin, for example.
100%. 100%.
All right. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I think it's a good film. That lady who came to chat us at the end, we were chatting about it and we said, it's a good film. But I was caught up in the hype, like the way this is being hyped as a terrifying masterpiece. I was looking for that when I went to the cinema, same as Fionnuala. So although I will say, yes, it's a good film, there's nothing bad about it, nothing to say, oh, avoid it or anything like that. Mm. It very much left me disappointed because it was just a remake of a film that I've seen before, done in a sort of deliberately camp style, everybody just, you know, giving it something, which I wasn't terrified by at all. It looked great. I mean, the locations and the visuals of the darkened corridors of the castle and the hills and the wolves running after the carriage and the city streets. I mean, it looks amazing. But it was fine. It was fine. I liked the lead performance, Vanessa Paradis and Johnny Depp's daughter. I thought she was very good. I thought she grounded it very well. And Willem Dafoe stood out. I was just... Good film, but I was still disappointed at the end of the day, you know? I wanted something more.
It just didn't match your expectations.
Didn't match my expectations, which is a shame. Like, you should... I feel I should be able to put my expectations aside. But I was just not... And I didn't really care about the characters that much either. Like, Nicholas Hoult as the husband of the main character, his storyline. Like, we've seen that before done in other Dracula films, and if you've read the original source material, that story itself should be gripping because he's this decent guy who's all alone in this big, empty, terrifying castle. But I kept just looking at the screen thinking to myself, oh, that's a real stylish way of doing that. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at the way they've done that. He's standing on...
Yeah, you were drawn in by the visuals rather than the story.
And one of the things that they did, a stylistic thing they did, was the camera repeatedly steps in and out of POV shots. Mm. So imagine it's you and me, Greg, and we're having a conversation. The camera may start completely focused on you and staring right on you, mm-hmm. but halfway through the conversation, the camera will do a swoop out so it catches the two people. They did that a lot, and it drew me out of the film every time. I kept thinking to myself, oh, there's the thing the director has done. Oh, there's another thing the director has done.
Yeah, I guess you.
And if I'm doing that...
You shouldn't be that distracted.
I agree with you. Yeah, that's yeah.
Okay, what are you giving it out of 10, my friend?
I'll give it a solid 6.
Solid
middle of the road.
6. And Fionnuala?
No, I don't want to start too high because the year is long. And this was supposed to be the movie of the January.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be setting the tone.
Yeah.
And you know the thing of it, this I'd only give it about a 5.
Okay.
I wouldn't say much more.
Yeah. Right, but strangely, it's still fine for a night out because you're not going to walk out giving out. You just might not have enjoyed it as much as perhaps you thought.
And if you don't like horror, you know the way...
That actually might work better for you.
Would you like a few jumps in it, then this is the thing for you. You know what I mean? Go and see it. You're definitely going to get your...
And it's a great film. Not only could we chat about it for ages, but again, bringing up the fact that someone came over and we were chatting, you can chat about it. Like if you go with a couple of mates, you'll chat away about it.
Nosferatu, it's in cinemas since the 25th, so I don't know how long it'll stick there for. But anyway, that could be part of your night out. More from Michael and Fionnuala shortly, but I want to welcome onto the show now Bernadette McFarland, writer and director of Play 4 Days in Derry. Bernadette, thanks so much for your time this morning. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. A bit exhausted, but not too bad.
Okay. This is a big piece of work, isn't it, Bernadette, in that you're telling the story of Derry's Bloody Sunday from the perspective this time of the women most intimately impacted by the murders. It's being staged at the Millennium Forum on January 24th and 25th. So tell us in your words and from your perspective how you tell this story.
Well, first of all, Greg, I had intended doing another story about Bloody Sunday, one that was already written and which I played in over 30 years ago. And she has since deceased, so I thought it would be nice to put it on. But when I read it, brain and play, I was in it, but it wasn't for me. I wanted to do a play about women. I'm very strong about, you know, women's passion and everything that they're involved in. So I got involved in, with the Movers and Shakers, and I started to look at the Bloody Sunday. The Bloody Sunday and what happened on the day. And I thought, gosh, you know, there's no mention of women or whatever in this. So that's where it began. I met with 13 families in Pilots Row, Bloody Sunday Museum, and I told them what I had intended doing because I wouldn't have done it without their permission. and they were all up for it. And I told them that I would be interviewing them. I would create this play and I would use what they have told me and write it into monologues, telling their story.
And is that because
it's never been told before?
Is that the authenticity that you wanted to get across, and that was the way you achieved that, in that you were dramatising or presenting their words, literally their words, in this work?
Yes, that's exactly it, Greg. What I didn't want it to be a piece of fiction. I wanted it to be authentic. I wanted to do justice for the women. This is their story, and it's a story that had to be told with great accuracy.
Mm.
So when I had interviewed them all individually, I recorded them, obviously. I then came home and started typing up the monologues. Now, had I have typed up everything they said, I would be there, would be in the Millennium Forum for 2 weeks.
Mm.
But it was work that I had to put in, and I managed to get them down to a story that was relatable to the women. And I had to have their approval. That was the most important part. I wanted their approval. And you know what, Greg? They were more than happy. They were actually, I was humbled, and they were humbled that at long last their story was going to be told.
And it was the story from many different perspectives through the same experience. Did you notice or come across a commonality as to how they lived their lives, how they coped, how they got through this experience?
Yeah, well, what you have to remember here, Greg, it's only based over 4 days, which was the Saturday when everything was normal. Sunday morning, everything was normal, had their dinner, then went to the march, and that's where it all began. And these women told me about how they got the news, how they reacted to the news, and how they were at the chapel and at the graveside, and basically ended up with how their life will never be the same, even after 53 years.
There are a few parties in this work. There's you, of course, and the work you've done. There are the women and the stories that shared with you, but there's also the audience, and that's perhaps the variable. You have had an opportunity to put this in front of people already. What is the reaction been from the audience, and has it taken you back, surprised you, or anything in any way?
It actually did, Greg. It did surprise me and overwhelmed me, because I was on stage as well. I played the part of Mrs. Kelly, who was Michael Kelly, one of the youngest of the young men shot. And I was in the front row. Now, when you consider Studio 2, it's quite a small studio. The alley was much bigger. But in Studio 2, I was in the front of the stage and I could hear the crying. I could hear the crying, and I tried to avoid eye contact with any of them. But it was very, very sad. It's very sad to see them. And people say it's 53 years ago. It's like it happened yesterday for a lot of them.
But Bernadette, you know, even for those of us who either lived through Bloody Sunday or the Troubles, more generally speaking, you know, we think we have a sense of what went on, and we often don't. But there's a number of generations since that were born after the peace process and perhaps don't really know what went on, what life was actually like, particularly for those 4 days. Have you found that for at least some of the audience so far, that it's been an eye-opener, that they've said, OK, I thought I knew, but I did not know?
That's 100%. They did not know. Now, the only way younger ones, I mean, even the cast, there's cast here playing the younger members of the families. They had no idea. And they couldn't believe just what happened and just the total injustice of it all. And they said, you know, we've been educated here tonight. We had no idea that A, B and C happened, or this, you know. And it was mind-blowing, because you assume that everyone knows everything about Bloody Sunday. But me, as the writer and director, and as someone who was on the march, I didn't know half of it either.
And I suppose, too, it's crazy, isn't it, that I presume at least for some, if not all, of the women that you spoke to, that it took 50-odd years, 53 years, for them to get a voice.
That's exactly. And, you know, and that's how, if you see the programme, it says, we are now telling you the untold stories. And these untold stories, that it would, they would break your heart. And as I said earlier, listening to the stories and me delivering them on stage, well, the response from the audience spoke for itself. And then they come up to me afterwards and said, you know, we had no idea, but the families come up to me after, and some said it was cathartic for them. And we have it on again, as you know, but some of them feel they couldn't go back again.
Yeah. Yeah, we can imagine.
And
we can
understand why.
And also because it is over half a century, but it's also like yesterday for many. Yes. I think it's an important piece of work for many reasons, as you've been outlining. It is the 4 days in Derry. It's in the Millennium Forum on the 24th and the 25th of January. It's a story told from the perspective of the women most intimately impacted by the murders. And it's been incredibly well received so far. A fantastic setting for you to go along and watch. The 24th, the 25th, contact the box office for ticket details. Bernadette, I hope at some stage you'll be able to draw breath. I can only imagine how emotionally draining working on something like this is, because you absorb people's grief and loss and emotions, and you're at some point going to have to have a cathartic experience yourself, I'm sure, in all of this.
Absolutely, because, I mean, I was only a young girl and I was there for all the wrong reasons. I was there to see the crack, to see the fellas. And, in fact, my granddaughter is now playing my part of the young girl at the time of Bloody Sunday. So, yeah, it's been amazing. And the first act is, it's funny in parts, but it was normal life, and I wanted to show what life was like before it hit us.
Lovely stuff. Bernadette, lovely to speak to you. Thanks so very much indeed. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Thanks. Back with more from Michael and Fionnuala after these. Hello, Space Boys, a podcast out at the moment. Yes. Now, I'm able to listen to podcasts in the car, but outside of that, I don't seem to have the time or space, and still I've conditioned myself to such an extent that listening to podcasts is a way of falling to sleep, that
Not while driving.
Not whilst driving.
No, because then I'd fall asleep when I'm driving.
No.
I'm very bad for foot, but I'm very bad that if I do one thing, you know, like as in when I read, if I read anywhere, if I was standing on my head and I started reading, I would eventually doze off.
Like car podcasts are
we got to put that to the test.
Chat and conversational. but then you see, I have to listen to the radio in the morning by choice. Want to, right? So it just really often leaves the commute home. That's just my little window for me to listen to that kind of stuff, because it's just, that's what I do. But anyway, hello, Space Boy.
Yes, hello, Space Boy. There's a couple of podcasts I've listened to. The other one I'll save for next week. I'm a huge David Bowie fan. Massive David Bowie fan. Yeah. Like at the end of the year, Last FM chronicled all my listener, and I listened behind Frank Sinatra, who had some like 850 tracks. It was David Bowie. I had like 700 and something, like 2 tracks a day. I'm always listening to David Bowie. This is about David Bowie, and it's absolutely fascinating story that I was not aware of. It takes us back to the late 1990s, and it's twofold. There's two things in this podcast. It's a 1 hour, 45 minute RTE podcast from just before Christmas. So there's two things in it. First of all, you're looking back to the 1990s, and you're looking at a story of Bowie in Ireland, and the story of a mad party slash concert that he gave that caused all sorts of problems in a residential area, which is a very cool, very interesting story of a rock star just having a mad party, which turns into a mad sesh. And it's also about some of the work he did and the interview, an Irish guitarist who worked with him on a couple of projects. And that side of it is very interesting as a Bowie fan. The other side of it, and the A story of the podcast, is about a guy called Dara O'Kearney, who's a very interesting character, who is also a Bowie superfan. Kearney is a professional poker player now, and he's a very interesting man in his own right. In the late 1990s, Bowie, who was an innovator, was one of the very first megastars to embrace the internet. And he set up an online site, a forum for his fans, and it was Bowie World, I think it was called, and it was ahead of the curve, like it was big time ahead of the curve, where people could meet virtually, and he wanted to have like virtual cities and virtual alleyways and a whole. He really was an innovator, and he really had his thumb on the back and pulse of what was coming down the that pipeline. One of the things though he did about this website was he started beginning to charge fans to be a member of it, and in other Bowie forums, Dara was very vocal about this, and he was very vocal about being against this. And this is where we get to the hub of the podcast, because Dara got an email asking him to elaborate why he was unhappy about the cost. Mm. And the email was signed DB.
The man himself.
Well, we don't know.
Okay, yeah.
Dara and DB.
I love the way you're trying to create intrigue on something that no one gives a flying
yeah, I know.
About.
Well, that's what the point of the thing is. Over the next,
was it?
Or was it?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. It was so David Brent.
Over the next several years, Dara and DB continued a daily email relationship or yes. conversation. Through the late 1990s, again, this is when email was just a brand new thing. And the idea of having that kind of access to a superstar was unheard of. Now, Dara talks
or Jimmy
in...
Jimmy that lives under the stairs.
Yeah, yeah. Dara is interviewed and he says that at no time did DB ever say who he was. But there was unmistakable, you know, clues as regards... He would go quiet at times when Bowie was maybe doing three concerts in America or something like that. There'd be no emails for like 4 days.
Do we find out an answer to that question conclusively?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Well, I don't want to give away the ending of the podcast, but I'll give it this way. Eventually,
the emails stop when David Bowie dies?
Dara, well, it stops when he had a heart attack. He had a heart attack and that dialed back. And Dara says at that point, he got maybe one email every Christmas until Bowie's death. So he said, his heart attack, yeah. But he does say, well, he doesn't know
it's David Bowie's stuff.
Well, he says that the only piece
the
of
man under the stairs could have quite right.
Could have easily done it, yeah. He said he never brought it up, but he did. Bowie was playing a concert in Ireland. It was around the time of the story that I mentioned. And Dara put it to him about, you know, he wasn't going to get to go to it for various reasons. And the replier said, do you want a couple of tickets left for you? So he said, yeah. So tickets were left. And when Dara went down and said, my name's on the list, he said, which was one of the coolest things that ever happened. He was able to go up to the bouncer and say, my name's on the list for two. And they looked at the list and they were like, oh yeah, you are here. So he said, all he can say for certain, I'm giving away the ending now. He says, all he can say for certain is it could have been David Bowie or it certainly was somebody very close to Bowie.
How long is the podcast? The
podcast is 45 minutes.
Well, you've just saved me 45 minutes.
I know, so yeah. I loved it though. As a Bowie fan, I loved it. I loved
it. Do you know what? He's excellent. And also,
interesting guy.
Very thoughtful. If you see some of his political observations back years and years ago.
I know the one, yeah.
So articulate and so on point.
Yeah. There were things going around. Yes, he was, there's no doubt about it.
He had a lot of nicknames as well. The White Duke.
One of the things about Bowie is take away his music for a second. A very smart individual who was very politically aware, and when it came to technology and innovation, again, I kind of knew this anyway to some degree, but listening to this, I was like, wow, he really knew what the internet would become 15 years before, like this was before things like Facebook and Twitter and even MySpace and Bebo had come on the scene. He really got this idea that fans would want to meet and talk and set up an identity for themselves and be... And nobody else was doing this in the mid-1990s.
Final question then. What's your favourite David Bowie song?
Everyone Says Hi from the Heathen album, 2003, which I think is a masterpiece of a song.
Do you have a favourite?
Yeah.
I think Life on Mars might be my favourite.
Oh, yeah, the classics, yeah.
Well, what do you mean the classics? Oh, you're not really David Bowie fan because you picked an A-side.
That's the classic. Yeah. They're a classic, but everyone says hi. Nobody knows
from Queen. You go, oh yeah, okay, one of them.
Oh, I thought you were a fan, Greg. I thought you were. I didn't realize you were.
So I have to do a deep dive into the B sides.
Well, I feel like no, I never said that. Although I suppose I was probably thinking that. No, the classics. I listened to the early ones too. Ziggy. It doesn't make it good.
It does make it his best work.
No, I listened to the early ones. I do. I listened to them all.
Best work, wouldn't it be the A side?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyhow, I stand by the fact that Heathen is a great album. Black Star is a fantastic album. His final album is a fantastic album. It's a beautiful album. I also
All right, then of Fat the Dog obvious Bomb. Songs, what's your favourite song?
God. I was going to say, Bomb's a bit. There's a song he wrote about George Bush, but nobody really knows that song.
I told you of songs that are people know of.
Okay, Let's Dance.
Really? That's terrible.
Right,
back with more from Michael and Fionnuala after these. Dervla Carr is a journalist from Bundoran and is on the show with us now because last night she was on First Dates Ireland. Good morning, Dervla.
Hello, Greg. How's it going?
I'm doing fantastic. So why did you put yourself forward, or did someone else nominate you for the show, or what's the story?
I just moved up to Dublin and said, why not? I work right beside the Gibson Hotel. Walk by it every day going to lunch. So I said, it's at the back of my mind. I was like, look, I'm not having any luck on these dating apps. So why not get maybe a professional to try match me with someone in it?
All right. And they did match you with IT manager Paddy from Kildare. Did he share your confident, outgoing nature?
Yeah, Paddy, he was quite quiet at the start, tried to bring his personality out of him throughout the date, but he was a lovely lad. It was very easy to talk to, and we had a lot in common. Claire, our producer, she really had her work cut out for her to try to find me a fella, as I'm very, very picky, so she done well.
In some of your sort of stuff that you liked, you could recognise that she put a bit of effort into it, even if maybe the whole package wasn't exactly what you wanted.
Yes, 100%. I just wanted them GA legs. Anyone that was able to talk about
looks
football.
Down at his legs. you've seen bigger legs hanging out of a nest than me anyway, but sure, look at Claire. Claire didn't have to look at me. Dervla, in terms of the experience, I haven't watched last night's episode, to be honest with you, but I've watched a lot of First Dates, and you have to divulge quite a bit about your past, it seems to be. How much control do you have over that, or is it sort of accepted that, you have to be a little bit frank and honest and divulge, what for some people they might be uncomfortable divulging?
Yeah, I really was myself. I had nothing really to hide. I didn't really talk much about my past relationship. Mm. I had one, and that was one and one only. They didn't really want to go into that much. It was more so what you're looking for, what you hope from to come out of First Dates. And really, my whole reason was going on it because I really don't like the way we're using the phone and how social media works on meeting someone. I want to go back to the traditional ways of meeting
someone face to face. That being said, it's not very traditional, is it? Because you recognise the faces in the restaurant, you're aware that you're being filmed. Does that fade over time and you can actually sort of get to know the person, or is there always a sense that as much as they might try and mask it, that you're on a set?
They made it very realistic. I didn't feel at all, obviously getting mic'd up and going in and heading into the restaurant and seeing the iconic faces of Matteo and and Neil. But honestly, the cameras were very well hidden. I did not feel at all that I was being videoed and filmed. But maybe it's just my personality and I just enjoy being in front of the camera.
Indeed. And is there a means to an end to in relation to that, Dervla, as a journalist, as a songwriter and as an ambitious young woman? Is there any element to it, and there'd be no shame in that game of sort of getting yourself out there to some extent? Does it have an advantage in that regard?
Yeah, I just really threw myself in the deep end and I just thought, why not? It was going to benefit, hopefully, my career. It was more so that everyone says I have a big personality, and then I just tried to show it to the nation.
Great stuff. As I say, I didn't get to see it. Many of the audience listening will. But how did it go with Paddy in the end? Can we say if were you a match and has there been any contact since? Any white smoke?
We headed straight for drinks after the date to get to
always
know each
a good
other
sign.
On camera, because I felt that as well, that I didn't get to know him as much as I hoped to over the date, because I felt like it kind of led conversation mostly. But we went for drinks, and then he organised the first date after First Dates, and then I organised the second one. And then it was just really, yourself, you're working full time, and he had obviously started a new job, and he was based in Limerick, I was based in Dublin. But we got on very, very well, and we left it on good terms. And
could it have been different if the geography was different?
Probably were, yeah. If we were mapped in it, if he was based in Kildare, might have could have worked easier. But at the same time, you know,
kind of heartbreaking in a way.
Yeah, sure look.
But it's also brilliant.
There's someone out there, just don't know who and where they are.
Well, you know what? You'll find them when the time is right. Dervla, thanks very much indeed. Fair play to you. Dervla Carr there, a journalist from Bundoran, took part in First Dates Ireland. In Britain, you know, they operate on cities, guys. You know, like, so it's Newcastle or Manchester or London, and it's easier to match people, I think. Whereas in Ireland, the geography comes into it, doesn't it? Right. Greg, did any of you watch The Missing on Netflix? Did any of us? Did I?
That's the...
Who's in it?
No, it's not on that long. It only dropped over the Christmas, if I'm right. That's the Harlan Coben one that's on. And it's based on Harlan Coben's books. You know the way he did that Stay Safe and did five or six of them?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I started watching it, and to be honest, and I'm a huge Harlan Coben fan. I've read every single one of his books, even his teen. He went through a teen series phase. Yeah. And I even
some
read
of those can be good, though.
And when they weren't.
Oh, his weren't.
I read them because I love him. But he this did not appeal to me. I don't know whether the listener liked it. It's just sort of like overly done. It's kind of like there's a crime that happened many years ago, and the ripple effect has gone through these friends and this marriage, and then it's about finding out 30 years later exactly what happened. That's the kind of basic story. Mm. But the book is excellent, but the show, when I started watching it, which I was looking forward
to, didn't engage. Greg and TV2 with Darts and Neverending Football. One of the shows I enjoyed was Bad Tidings, but I do agree Chris McCausland has used his visual impairment to his advantage, and usually in a self-deprecating way, whether in a chat quiz show, and has certainly opened his world, especially to Strictly Judge, as it softened Craig, who shed a tear, wrote him a poem, or maybe that was the panto. Oh, no, it wasn't. It is strange that a lot of horror films out now. Dare I say, someone must have a stake in it. It's chilling enough outside. And talk about old films, you should check out Talking Pictures. As Katie said, Die Hard's not just for Christmas. Just like Brussels sprouts, you can have all year round. Kevin from Dunlow, big peas, Brussels sprouts. Okay, let me see. There's quite a lot to unpack there. You liked Season Titans. You thought it was great.
Yes.
That other film you mentioned, I'm not quite sure. Talking Pictures, have I seen that?
That's the channel. It's the channel.
Is it?
It's the channel, yeah. It's the channel with,
he does a deep dive in the high numbers. Fantastic, he's up in the hundreds, that guy.
Fantastic, yeah.
All right, Kev, thanks as always. Really do appreciate it. Sister.
Have to have him in sometime.
Yeah, Kev, would you up for it? Sister, but would he be able to be as funny off the cuff? You know, like, I make it look easy.
You do? No. Oh, that's what people say about you.
I don't know. That's what people say about you. He's quite a lot of puns in that now that he definitely...
People often say to me, Greg, he may not be a real hardcore fan of David Bowie, but my God, his off-the-cuff jokes are amazing.
If anybody people wants to see your ability, the radio play was amazing.
It was very good.
I couldn't get over how good you were.
Oh, thank you.
Really good.
Really funny. Because I thought it was real. You know, I just got all of a sudden, I thought, right, I'm going to treat this like it was real.
Well, that's what everyone kept saying to me. Who'd heard, they were like, oh God, yeah, he was very upset about the name. And I was like... Well, I'd imagine he probably would be a little
bit.
when he keeps saying,
series, like my friend Mary, who loved the series, she loved that. She was telling it back to me. Greg was so funny.
I can bring this.
Nobody realizes that you're funny, Greg.
I'm on
LinkedIn.
Nobody
realizes you can be funny.
Sister Claire Crockett from Derry. First step on the road to sainthood, live from Spain, will be shown at Brunswick Cinema in Derry at 4:30 p.m. on Sunday. Can also be viewed on YouTube.
Oh,
I'll have to Google that.
Yeah,
someone could be taking the hand. I don't know. Now, we only have about 3 minutes, but Lockerbie, A Search for Truth. This is where we've talked about these ones whereby we've lived through it and you think you know it all. And the Lockerbie disaster's got an awful lot of coverage. This looks great. That in terms of the visuals, it seems there's a lot of money being chucked at this. What's it like?
It's a very enjoyable thing to watch. And I know I was watching it, and I know people that were watching it, they didn't know the story, so they'd be younger, and that they, you know, I, as you say, thought I kind of knew the story. You know, the way it is, in that it was Gaddafi and it was his people and that kind of thing. And they The guy was arrested and he was arrested and that was it. This goes into the story of one family in particular. Their daughter was on the plane and as with everybody else, sadly, she was killed. I was shocked that I didn't really remember how many people on the ground that were killed or impacted on it. That's some terrible stories there, which they definitely should be doing more. There's a podcast for you to get more information on the people in the town because it was just horrendous. But and it is very big done. I mean, when the plane crashes and all that kind of thing, you're like, oh, my God, this is terrible.
Right.
There is, you know, bodies and trees. It's just they've completely, as you know.
I'd say they probably did that on purpose to try and drive home the disaster that this was.
Because to be honest, you know, we often hear about these things and you kind of think of them as being out at sea or you think of them as being there.
And they can be sanitized a bit.
100%. And I suppose we don't let our mind go there. And then if you think about it, at the time that this happened, there wasn't a 24-hour news cycle. There was no such thing as, you know, really being on the ground with it and kind of going through it and that kind of thing. And it was all very...
This is the dramatisation with the guy from The Staircase whose name escapes me.
Colin Firth is in Firth is in it and he papers Dr. Jim Swire and he ends up being one of the spokespeople for the victims' families.
Okay, well,
and
the
investigation.
I might watch that between now and next week and maybe we might kick off with that next week if that's okay because time
There's a lot of depth in it and it is definitely where people should check it out.
All right, okay. So we might start with that next week if that's okay.
Yeah.
But we have run out of time and Michael, thank you very much indeed.
Great
really appreciate
here.
It.
Loved it.
You've nothing to plug or anything.
Re-listen to, if you miss the drama, re-listen to it. I was shocked by... Who it turned out to be. Okay. I totally had my mind.
Nobody got it. I'm shocked that nobody.
I totally thought it was somebody else.
You've got a lot of depth.
You were the best. Honest to God. The whole way through it, I was like, how is Donal Kavanagh the famous actor of the newsroom when Greg is putting out performances like that?
Yes, there you go, exactly.
Like, how has he not been called
We need to get Greg Hughes on stage.
The Letterkenny Musical Society.
We need to get you on stage.
Michael Leddy, thank you so much. Oh. Fionnuala Rabbit, thank you. Great to have you back on the show again. It's great to have the both of you on together. Okay, that's where we have to leave it. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll chat to you all being well Monday morning at 9. Hopefully things thaw out a little bit for those of you who are isolated and looking to get back into society. But for me, Greg Hughes, as I say, have a great weekend, but stay safe and stay tuned.